Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, sir. Gang. Good morning to everybody in the chat with us. As always, a wide variety of locales, some of which are colder than others. Let us know how it is. Let us know how it is in Winnipeg, Jennifer. The weather report from here in Ottawa is we're getting, starting later today, about a day and change straight worth of snow, which could build up to 40 centimeters, they're saying. And if you're in the U.S., 40 centimeters is actually 4 polar bears tall. A polar bear being 10 centimeters in height. So that's...
That's a good, excellent weather report. I love that.
We're getting 4 polar bears deep of snow today. So,
excellent. Yes.
Baby polar bears.
Yeah, that's true. We didn't specify the age. They're very young.
We love our chat room. Welcome everybody in the chat room. But hey, who's our guest today? Who's this other fella sitting over here?
No kidding. Welcoming back Mark Shepherd with us here today. Oh. Did we lose Mark? I just see his icon now. You still see him? Okay, good. Okay, cool. It's just on my side then. That's a stunning. We go to introduce Mark and he goes away. It's like, oh, what happened?
Needs a squirrel.
Well, thanks. You've been a wonderful audience.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone. I got to go now. Looks like I'm double booked today. Yeah. We have Mark Shepherd with us here again today. Mark's been with us a couple of times in the past, but for the folks who haven't met Mark on our show here before, Mark, go ahead and give us an introduction to yourself, a little bit of background, et cetera.
Sure. Hello, everyone. I'm Mark Shepherd, and I'm an independent learning and development practitioner. I live just east of now very snowy Toronto, Ontario, as I look outside my window. And a lot of the work that I do is at the intersection of learning and workplace performance.
Mm-hmm. And we've covered, as I said, you've been with us a couple of other times, and we've talked about different things, you know, that based on experiences you've had at different positions and locales. And today we're talking onboarding, which I think affects pretty much everybody in the L&D space. I would have to say it's kind of a catch-all thing that most L&D departments have to have some angle or aspect of as part of their part of their tool set and part of what they have to make happen, et cetera. And Brent, you were reading us in the green room. Ha ha, we have a green room. You were reading us that one statistic. Do you want to throw that in there for the mix? Because I was like, oh, really?
Yeah, and I don't, this comes from Gallup. It's a Gallup, one of the Gallup polls, as they say in the news world, right? In 2017, 88% of employees think their employer did a poor job with the onboarding process.
That's ouch. No kidding.
Yeah, where do you go with that? I mean, that's not a good sort of mark on the reflection of the work we do.
That's very true. And to be honest, I'm actually not surprised at that particular statistic. I'm really not.
I felt it didn't surprise me that it was a majority, but the height of that, I mean, that's just short of 90%, just short of 9 out of 10 people saying that, which is holy cow.
And that statistic alone, if that was the only result that they got from it, leads to a whole pile of questions. Like what's the impact of that poor experience on your human capital, your internal brand, ongoing performance, talent management, all of those kinds of things, if the onboarding isn't done exceptionally well. Mm-hmm. To me, it's a huge missed opportunity for an organization.
Yep. And we actually have a couple of folks echoing that stat in their own experiences in the chat too. Hirsch noting that his last job, he was put in a room to look at PowerPoint slides for 2 days.
Hirsch, I'm pretty sure that that's a violation of one of the tenets and acts of the Geneva Convention. So you could probably file a complaint with the International Red Cross. That is it's horrifying, but also, once again, not entirely surprising that people take that experience or that approach to the onboarding experience.
Yeah. Well, let's look at the bright side of that statistic. That means we've got a lot of room for improvement, and the little things that we can do can make us look like superheroes to fix it, right?
Yeah. And and what's really nice is that it doesn't take much to have even a half decent onboarding program within your organization. And a lot of that, at least from my experience, comes down to a really thorough understanding of the workflow and who's involved. And that's everything from talking to the talent acquisition folks through to IT, provisioning, all of those kinds of things. Because as the L&D person who has been tasked or voluntold with onboarding, you can't just believe that the role starts when the person gets in the door. It absolutely has to start from the time that they've been identified as talent to come into the organization.
Yeah. Let's talk about maybe the kinds of things that people typically do in onboarding that you've seen, Mark, and maybe even some of the things that from your perspective maybe didn't make sense or were maybe perhaps not providing value. I mean, let's start with the bad stuff first and then see where we can go from there.
Yeah, it is easy to talk about the horror stories within onboarding, and Hirsch's example is just one of them. But one of the things that I've seen is where an organization has actually done an exceptional job with the new hire experience, and that's putting people through the intake, recruitment, all of those kinds of things. They've had a stellar experience. And then they come to the organization on day one and they're saddled with a binder, you know, about that thick of policies to read and procedures and all this kind of thing. And it's such a contrast from what you've experienced, where you're getting excited about coming to the company. You've got all this energy you want to harness and push into the organization for this new job. And what do you get? Paper. And that's one of the things that should be step one to try to avoid is let's start ditching the paper. Let's start taking advantage of technology to automate a lot of this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's always paperwork when you know, people's first job forms to fill out and that kind of stuff. But certainly handing them, I guess, a mass of just simply reading doesn't necessarily mean that anything of that is providing value.
No. And it's also there's an expectation. If somebody hands you a binder and says, here, read this, your expectation is, oh, wow, I got to know all this. And is it really realistic that you have to know all that on day one? one of the best experiences I had with onboarding is I worked very closely with the HR team at a company actually not far from where I currently live. And they said, you know what, we boiled it down and said there's only two things that somebody absolutely positively has to do on day one. We have to verify their identity and we have to have them sign their employment contract. Those are the things required by law, at least in the province of Ontario. That's what's required on day one. They said everything else for compliance, you've probably got 60, 90 days. So the question is, why are you absolutely bombarding them with nothing but policies and all this kind of stuff when you could be taking the opportunity to actually get them involved in the organization? Take them to a meeting, have their input solicited on a project. I mean, you brought somebody on for a reason. You want to have that talent and you're thinking, hey, we've got somebody who can help us transform widget A to, you know, widget B, or get us to 2.0, whatever 2.0 happens to be. So let's start getting them involved, because you want somebody to go home from that first day and say, I can't wait to go back for day two.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like telling a good story, right? I mean, we can probably take a lot from that comment you made just right there. Isn't that, you know, if you want people to keep wanting to come back for more. I think there is a rush for efficiency that causes a lot of these problems, right? It's like we've got all this stuff that has to be done. How can we squeeze it in all into the smallest amount of time possible to just get it done, to get them busy, to get them out, you know, working and doing the things we need them to do? How fast can we get them past that onboarding process instead of saying, okay, we're not going to worry about length. Let's worry more about quality and let's make it an enjoyable experience.
Yeah. Well, and what people are doing there is it's a rush for completion and ticking off the box. Now in the chat, Donna and Jason have raised some really good points that there are industries that are regulated and have a requirement for compliance stuff that has to be addressed on day one. And I'm profoundly empathetic to those environments. I've worked in healthcare and human services, so I know that some of those things do have to happen. But there is a way to actually work around it and actually make it more meaningful for the new hire. And also, how it actually plays out over the course of their onboarding. Donna raises another good point. You know, how much of it sticks after day one? Well, I'm telling you, if all you're doing is getting people to sign forms, very little is going to stick. If actually is going to be active, then why are we not driving onboarding with activities, treating people like adults, letting them see the consequences of decisions for, say, something that's non-compliance? Yeah. And it doesn't take a doctoral level of expertise in instructional design to be able to do that. What it does require is courage on the part of the organization to transform that experience to something that people are going to go, wow, I now feel like I'm involved. I feel like I'm engaged. I understand what the organization's risks are, and I know what's going to happen if I don't, you know, play by the rules.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very industry specific. I think it's one of the things that's hard about these types of conversations is that when you research it or when you're thinking about onboarding and you're reading about how other places do it, you start to scratch your head and go, well, there's no way I can do that. Not in my environment. I think there's a lot of that. And I'm kind of like thinking to myself, what are the commonalities though? What are some of the easiest things we can do as the learning folks? Because remember, like you mentioned, it's a partnership, right? HR has to get involved. IT has to be involved. I guess my other question then from this little rant would be, you know, who owns it? Like, who owns onboarding in your organization? I would guess most of the time, but not always.
Well, that's true. And I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that HR has to own the whole thing. And this is also where I see programs not being as effective as they could be, because there's an expectation on the part of management or leadership, particularly hiring management. Oh, HR is going to take care of all that. Because their mindset is that it's just about compliance and ticking things off. Well, let's now look at this from a leadership perspective. If the role of the leader is to develop their talent, if we want to take the military spin on it, say effectively as the leader, you're training your replacement, then you are the one who needs to own that peak, who actually owns the execution. HR can be the stewards of the program and its design. Nothing wrong with that. But the actual execution has to lie with the hiring manager and organizational leadership.
Hmm. That's a shift. I think that's a shift for a lot of people. I think a lot of managers are like, when you're done going through that process, then come see me.
Exactly. And the lack of involvement of the people manager is where a lot of organizations, and I think coming back to those Gallup statistics, that's where I think that poor experience comes from. Because, and I wish I could remember where the stat came from, but I did a couple of workshops on onboarding, and the research at the time showed that it took about 6 months for a new employee to be contributing back to the organization more than what they had cost the organization to that point. So people, say, well, you know, you're going to be up and running in 30 days. Probably not. If you're going to a new industry, you're going to a new organization, you've got a lot of stuff to learn. There needs to be organizational patience required to grasp that you've got to give people that time and the space to actually get up to speed. Because sure, it's easy to say, well, it's just not working out after 90 days. Well, whose fault is that? Is that the new hire? Is that the hiring manager? Is that the organization's fault? And are you really, really willing to spend even more money to bring in new talent to the organization. There's ample HR research that shows just how costly it is to bring a new person into an organization or to replace somebody that you've hired.
Yeah, and Donna had pointed out in the chat earlier too that, you know, the impact of onboarding is actually the first step really in reducing turnover.
Bingo.
You know, it's your introduction to the company, your sense of value within the company, role, and all of that stuff. And if day one or day one through short, you know, early days or whatever aren't meeting, especially after that sort of stellar hiring process, you know, which has you built up and then boom, you know, building people back up. So, yeah,
exactly. And I like Jonathan's point here, saying that, you know, some employees will make a long-term decision about their future with a company within the first 6 weeks. So there's this huge potential for the job hunter's equivalent of buyer's remorse. If the onboarding program doesn't work. And you know, I really think it's important to mention that it's about onboarding and it's just about policy. But to me, it's not just a single track. If you want to liken this to an orchestral score, you've got a lot of different things that are happening at the same time. Yes, you have compliance. Yes, you have getting people up and running on payroll. But you also have integrating them into workplace culture. By the same token, you have integrating workplace culture with the new hire, because there should be change on both sides. You also have the person getting up to speed with the expectations for their new role. Some people may be moving laterally. Some people may be moving and taking a step up into a new role. So you've not only would you have the line of business operations you have to learn, you also have to learn about leadership and management in that organization. So it becomes a lot more layers to consider. Yeah. And that's why I love this as an L&D challenge, because it's not just one learning objective. You know, by the end of this program, the learner will be able to produce X number of widgets in X minus two, you know, hours worth of time. And at significantly reduced cost. No, you've got so many more things. It becomes program, it becomes curriculum, and becomes a full-blown course of study. And if you don't approach it like that from the start, you will only ever be in this single track of compliance and treating it like a waterfall. Say, okay, well, we've got the HR stuff out of the way. Now let's do the finance stuff. And now we've forgotten about all these other things. So let's go into getting you up to speed on work. All of that stuff has to happen. And if you forget the principles of spaced learning, interspersed learning, your program is just not going to fly.
Yeah, I was just going to ask. So what would you recommend? How can we make this better? And you nailed a couple, at least of the, you know, the things we know as learning professionals, you know, what we could be doing, but maybe we make it a little bit more tactical. What kinds of things can we do?
And I think I'll toss in, Michael has a really neat and related question in the question panel. We want to do a face-to-face session on our guiding principles. Any ideas on activities to help people put our values into practice? And I think there's definitely opportunities for what we just started talking about to be leveraged in that.
That's something where I see a shift to storytelling from presentation about how values are enacted within an organization. And that's one of the big things that organizations need to do. I mean, the mission, vision, and values are nice things to actually have up on the wall in reception, but unless you're enacting them and actually driving your program by those values so people can see it, then they remain just those nice plaques up on the wall. So storytelling would be a great start. Lots of, you know, internal testimonials, client customer testimonials, those kinds of things are ideal. Absolutely ideal.
It would be, I think we would be missing out on a great opportunity here too, to also maybe interject the conversation around culture, because we've had that conversation a lot too, where people say, you know, I've been asked to help, you know, turn our company into a learning culture, or how do we, you know, how does the learning and development team, you know, make our company a learning culture and blah, 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 all that kind of stuff about culture. And somehow it's our responsibility. And it's like, well, if we are going to take on that responsibility, then shouldn't we start with the onboarding process and actually if the business says our culture is X and this is what we believe, maybe we should start with that. Like, how cool would it be your first day in, you go and you volunteer in the community or whatever. I know a lot of companies do volunteer things, right? Maybe you start off easy. It's like, hey, you know what? Nothing about the business today. We're going to go and we're going to get to know each other by going out and doing some of the charity work that we do.
Exactly. Those kinds of things, you know, what I'll call the left field experiences, something that somebody does not expect, will definitely challenge their assumptions about what the onboarding experience should be. I very tongue in cheek, I liken this to somebody actually going and doing a presentation where they haven't used PowerPoint and people are going, oh, wow, this is really cool. I'm paying attention to it, you know, to a dynamic speaker and facilitator, and I'm not distracted by visuals.
Yeah, there's a lot of good examples in the chat, and the two primary ones that I think we've all heard about is Disney and Apple having great onboarding programs.
Absolutely. I mean, there's certainly of that experience. And from everything that I have seen, these programs start with effective planning. And to borrow the phrase from the successive approximation model by Michael Allen, Richard Seitz, if you don't have a savvy start with this approach and you don't have everybody involved to build out your roadmap, then this is simply not going to fly. And I remember with the company I was working for close to home, then called Northern Lights Canada, I got all the stakeholders in the room and we burned through a whole bunch of post-its and we started mapping out all the things the hiring managers wanted to have done for their roles and HR needed to have done for its roles. And we had to have a lot of tough decisions about, to answer the questions, all right, what's the cost if we don't do this at point A? And we move it to point B, what's the cost? And you start really thinking about things like cognitive load and what that means in practical terms for a new hire. So often people have had this, you know, the proverbial drink from the fire hose experience, and they're just overwhelmed. And that's not going to contribute to their performance. If you start pacing things out, give them the time and space to actually pick up new experiences and giving them practical activities to actually get involved with, and tie it and let people make sense of how it all ties together.
Yep. I was just looking for a podcast. You know, people were asking, you know, I saw Donna say in there, you know, field trip to Disney. But one thing I've noticed is a lot of ex, or former Disney execs are out working as consultants now, and they have podcasts and things like that. So there are ways we can learn. And the one that I started listening to recently was by Jeff Knoll. I'm not exactly sure what his position was, but his podcast is titled If Disney Ran Your Life. I'll drop it in here.
I think if people just look for the name.
He's a very dynamic, smiley guy, as you would expect as a former Disney guy. And I met a guy here in Arizona that is former Disney, and he's just an entrepreneur now. And he started up the whole esports truck craze. You know how you can like hire a truck, one of those big trucks, to come to your house and all your kids can have an Xbox party and they bring all the games and all the stuff and then they drive up, drive away kind of thing. Sorry. They're out there. Yeah. People are good. You can find them.
Maria has tossed into the chat the example of Zappos, who actually offer people money if they want to quit now. So
I remember reading about that, and was it Tony Shea? Yeah. Is that his name? He wrote a book about how he did how he created Zappos and everything. I think that's in there. And they start the process, the interview process, at the airport. The guy driving the shuttle actually reports out on how the person he picked up at the airport treated him.
Hmm.
So like from the minute they get off the plane, they're being interviewed basically.
Oh, that's a new take on the, you know, you better be nice to the person sitting at the reception desk because you never know who's actually sitting there.
Right.
Yep. Making some assumptions. I threw a link in there to the Zappos culture book, which I think echoes some of this stuff too, if folks want to check that out. So, yeah, very cool. Mark, let's talk a little bit more then about some of the other things that you've seen or had a chance to be part of, that led to at least successful outcomes for onboarding. Some other things that we can encourage people to do.
Well, I was lucky in the most recent onboarding project I did was to really have a free hand with it, which I know is such a rarity for a lot of us in L&D. But we joke about, and I think it was Charles Jennings who said that he was once living the consultant's nightmare, that he came in and made all these recommendations, and they said, "Hey, great. Now." So I was able to use the learning management system that they had in place to actively involve the managers in the process and provide some of that oversight and governance on the process that tends to be missing. And in my case, I know I'm getting into the technical weeds, but you'll see where I'm going. This company was actually using Moodle. Very rare that I had a corporate implementation of Moodle, but it worked quite well. And HR was really tired of having to chase down the paper sign-in sheets. And one of the things I did was I repurposed the an assignment function where the new hire, if they reached a particular milestone, would answer a question which had to go to the manager, and the manager would then sign that off. That gave us the trail for when things needed to be done at a certain time. And more importantly, HR had oversight into it. They could see that all these things were done. They had a full track of what was done and when. The CEO, who was actively involved in most aspects of the business, was able to see this as well. And the window that it provided on that experience and the way in which the relationship between the hiring manager and the new hire changed, because they were both partners in this process, because that was the way it was designed, made such a difference to people being actively engaged. We also put offline activities that were part of the timeline. We had room for reflections for people to make notes and take notes, and built some synthetic activities that would precede some of these offline activities. We would have those checked off as well. And just using the platform to actually do all the heavy lifting for tracking, automation, and the reporting shed such a light on what was being done. And we started getting feedback about changing some of the timelines and adding some additional activities before we would go out and do something real world, changing the time that might be required for certain activities, maybe on the compliance or HR side, and say, you know what, we can push that out to about 5 weeks, but there's a couple things we want to have people engaged on in week three, so let's make some changes. And because you're doing it in a platform, most of them have drag and drop interfaces, you can literally shuffle these things around in real time and have an immediately updated program. One of the other things I've seen done well is organizations that have a lot of talent coming in is they start putting their new hires in cohorts.
That's an interesting topic as well, as in a lot of companies too. It's different. Some like retail, for example, they have a lot of turnover, and it's not about reducing the turnover. It's just sort of expected. Like maybe they have holiday, you know, it's part of their business model, right? We hire people for this chunk of time and that's it. But every year when that time rolls around, we got to hire in a whole bunch of more people, but we only keep them for X amount of time. So they have to be spun up really fast, and we have to be efficient in those situations.
Yeah. And you can still do that if you're taking the right kind of approach. Like if you're going with micro learning and a lot of built-in performance support, but you still have all that structured structured behind it, with the managers being involved, with the coaching, with the feedback that's required on performance. I don't think that 6 month window ever really changes. But what it does is that you can scaffold people effectively to get them up to speed. And obviously complexity of task is going to drive how fast people are getting up to speed as well. You're probably not going to have as much patience for somebody in a very straightforward piecework type job to say, yeah, you got, you know, we'll give you 6 months. No, they're going to expect something a little faster. Whereas if you have something that's much more complex, lots more ambiguity, well then yes, you are going to need more time.
Yep. Some awesome contributions in the chat. Well, let's circle back a bit. Alicia's noting the best onboarding I've ever had, the best onboarding I've ever had involved one-on-one meetings with leaders, department heads across the company. So getting at least a taste, and that's got to do with, you know, with culture and vision and understanding, you know, where you are within the big picture, way more than just being handed a binder, obviously.
Yeah.
Lori's noting for our call takers, product support, on the first day they get, on the first day they share the path to how to get promotions and raises for the first 18 months written in the smart format. Very low turnover rate. So giving people that's a excellent. Clear indication of something beyond that, those 6 months and what things, you know, potentially could be and how to get there, I guess.
Yes.
Clearly too. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's an interesting new term or trend. I don't know if it's new or not, but there's some data here on it as well, and they have called pre-boarding.
Yes.
Does anybody in the chat do, how much work do you do with these new employees before their first day? And it's not necessarily, you know, you're still recruiting them. It's like they've already accepted. Right. It's already official, but maybe there's a gap between that official, I've signed the paperwork that says, yes, I'm going to come to your company, and that first day experience. What do you do in the meantime?
Yeah. And those are neat ideas, but there's something I learned recently, and I don't know if people have considered this. You have to consider whether you may actually be breaking employment law by having them do work before they have officially started. And this was something that I hadn't considered. And again, maybe this is an Ontario thing, but it, depending on what you're asking them to do in a pre-boarding stage, you may effectively be trying to get them to do unpaid work. So your in-house counsel may want to actually have just a quick look-see on what it is you're planning to make sure that you're in compliance. Conceptually, I think pre-boarding is brilliant. And even if all you're doing for pre-boarding is just having a running dialogue between the hiring manager and the new hire, setting some expectations, sending them out what the roadmap could look like, maybe collaboratively building that roadmap to allow for the experience and skills of that new hire to be taken into account. Because, hey, as adults, we love knowing that the organization respects our experience and doesn't treat us like small children. So you can actually get a lot of those things in place, treating it as a conversation.
You know, I would as we get close to the time where we need to wrap up here, I just want to give a quick shout out to everybody in the chat too for dropping in such great ideas and sharing their experience as well. That's really what Idiotic is all about, right? We bring in the whole community together and having everybody learn from each other. I love to see so much activity over there. So
I'd love to actually see a transcript of the chat, because there's some fantastic stuff going on over here.
Well, the chat is preserved in the Crowdcast recording. It's always available to come back and scroll through for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Scott's asking, how do we say idiotic with a straight face? Well,
you don't.
It's just idiotic is just our nature. It's just what we are. We don't argue with that. So,
and it's not even an HR issue. We're totally good with it.
That's right. It's self-proclaimed. It's not that somebody else is designating us as idiotic.
Yes,
we determined this ourselves.
Yes, idiotic and not in a way that will get you
into HR.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Before we go, we head to the wrap up music, Mark, throw in some contact info in there. And I will mention that next week, we'll be actually rolling out some of your other thoughts on onboarding on the Domino blog. So we will be following up with the folks in the Crowdcast list, you know, with a link to that to be able to check out some more ideas and stuff that you've got together there, as well as a good follow up for this. So folks who joined us, watch for that email next week when that comes, you know, with that link. Yeah, Mark, don't forget to drop in your, you know, LinkedIn or whatever works for you best in there as we get rolling. As always, Mark, thanks so much for joining us today, and thanks for the thoughts. It's been a really fascinating conversation. And as always, the folks in the chat, as Brent said, thanks so much for contributing as we went along here, guys. Lots of great thoughts and ideas to flesh things out there too. So awesome. Well, hope everybody has a great rest of their Wednesday, depending on where you are in Wednesday, time zones and all of those sorts of things. In the meantime, let's play a little trumpet music and dance into the rest of our day.
Let's get out of here. Thank you, Mark. Always good to see you, my friend.
Thanks,
Jens. Thanks, everybody in the chat. Good times. Let's get a little chair sway going with the trumpet.